Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour on this Friday, the 8th day of May, 2015. And this is The Horn, Friday on the Front Porch. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and participate in the zany multimedia real-time extravaganza that is the chat room between the hours of 6 and 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time when the program's live. Good evening to those of you who arrived on time. Good evening, 4 of 9. Good evening, Chug a Punch. Good evening, M. Brandt. And good evening, Texas D. All capably moderated by Sparky, who is also the moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, which you can be a part of for Friday on the Front Porch, if you so choose, by, if you never have done this before, sending a contact request on Skype, which is incredibly easy to use. To Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C. And he will get you right into the process. And you'll be part of the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable when we fire it up, about 58 minutes from now. Well, I thank you for asking, M. Brandt. Hey, Bob, how are you? Doing pretty good. It was a lovely, warm, beautiful blue sky kind of day here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan. There's also some pollen. Timeout. Nope, not going to happen. How about that? Well, oh. So that's the chat room thing. A gentle reminder that this is a listener-supported broadcast effort. There are no ads here. We don't have anyone who wants you to. There are no gold bugs at the Horn, and there are no vacuum cleaners that pick up Swedish bowling balls and drop them on your Bose Wave mattress or anything like that. No. There are no little capsules that will that will grow copious, dense amounts of lush hair on your little bald patch. Because if there was, I'd probably be like OD'd on the stuff. Yeah. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And so if you would like to help us keep this going, we are trying to we're trying to build a little bit of a cushion here. And so we're seeking to raise on any given evening $200. $200, that's 20 folks at 10 bucks. Two at 100, one at 200. Yeah, you know how it goes. And we didn't quite get there last night, and so, yeah. If you want to help out, it is much appreciated, and thanks go out. And you know, I'm experiencing this more and more often, but I'm getting a couple of requests here and there for just, you know, hey, keep me anonymous. I don't need the notoriety. So we've, thanks to, in the past 24 hours, to an anonymous contributor, thank you very kindly to Faith. Yeah. And thank you. Hang on. Uh, Thank you to Gary. Much appreciated. Gary and Gaia, thank you very kindly. So that having been said, we need to raise about $150 this evening to reach the goal as previously expressed, $200 this evening. The PayPal button is under the tab Contribute at headonradionetwork.com. It's very easy. All you have to do is get to the next screen, just fill in enough basic details to get to the next screen and make your choices, and never mind the more intrusive queries, which you can, in fact, leave blank. If you prefer to participate via the United States Postal Service, that address is easy. It is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, WV 25801. And all checks and money orders should be made payable to The Horn and not to Bob Kincaid, as A, I don't see him, and B, I don't get him, and C, Boss Man Wayne takes care of all that. And if you want to use the Postal Service, shoot me a little note, and I'll tell Boss Man Wayne he can leave the spider-proof gloves in the truck when he goes to open the echo chamber. Okie dokie. Wonderful. Let's see. Friday on the front porch, we've got a little of this, a little of that, some silly, some stupid. And then, of course, there's always the dangerously violent. I thought we would begin the program this evening with a little game of Name That Civil Unrest Audio. Doesn't that sound interesting? So what we've got here is some audio of civil unrest, and the goal is going to be to guess where it comes from. Okay? Okay. Oh, by the way, before we get started, the general reminder, if you want to reach me during the program, you can do it via email at Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com, on Twitter, at Bob Kincaid, and Bob Kincaid on Facebook. Welcome, welcome, one and all. All right. Name that civil unrest. Got it? Yeah. Ferguson? Baltimore? Seattle? Athens? Rome? London? No, that's audio from Tel Aviv, where Ethiopian Israelis, you know, Israelis who are, let's say, darker than a brown paper bag, are sick and tired of being treated like crap. And so they took to the streets in protest against police violence, to which they are routinely subjected. Naturally, when the Ethiopian Israelis protested police violence, what was the outcome? Well, of course, police violence. Stun grenades. You may have even heard there, if you were paying close attention and have a really, really sharp hearing, you may have heard the clackety, 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 clackety of the cavalry. Yeah, the Israeli cops called in the cavalry to run down some protesters. Because, see, those dark-skinned Israelis are getting all uppity and not wanting to be beaten and tased and tormented. Twice in 2 days now, that video goes back to Sunday, I think. Dozens of injuries were reported by protesters and police. A police spokesperson later said that 26 people were arrested. Activists indicated that more protesters were in police custody. There were also similar protests in Jerusalem Thursday night, last Thursday. The protesters blocked the main freeway in both directions in Tel Aviv's Tel Aviv's highway system. And of course, being sick of that, the police out of this decidedly now right-wing state used violent force to run the protesters out of the highway. But they did continue marching toward Rabin Square, where, well, and that's where that noise you heard came from. Mm-hmm. One protester told Israel's Channel 10, "I was in the border police, and I've never seen stun grenades used at a protest in Israel. We're Israelis. We're Jews." Meanwhile, Knesset Joint List Chairman Ayman Odeh said, "As a member of the Arab population, which suffers from racism and violence by the police, it was only natural for me to join the protest by the Ethiopian population today in Tel Aviv. I promise to stand and struggle by their side until there is a more equal and just society here in which there is no difference between black and white, man and woman, Jew and Arab." Of course, for those well-versed in the elements of fascism, this is typically authoritarian fascist conduct, and I think it can be argued that, yeah, Benjamin Netanyahu's gone pretty much full fascist. How do we know this? Well, via the Washington Post, a bit of news arriving out of the Netanyahu attempt to form a government there. He has appointed as justice minister in that country the right-hand woman of Naftali Bennett, who is an ultra-nationalist who despises all people who are of Palestinian descent. Ayelet Shaked will be the next justice minister. She has posted in the past approvingly an article by the late Israeli writer Uri Elitzer, in which, and those of us who know our American history will immediately have a point of reference for this, especially those of us who are passing familiar with the genocide practiced by the American government against indigenous peoples in this country. Uri Elitzer, and remember, the incoming Justice Minister of Israel, Ayelet Shaked, posted this approvingly. Uri Elitzer referred to Palestinian children, you know, the ones that the Israelis bomb in their cradles, as little snakes. Little snakes. Granted, Ayelet Shaked tried to scrub her Facebook page of the reference, but that's okay. It was too late. It had already been copied for posterity so that people could know what a fascist she is and a genocidalist. It was posted, of course, in Hebrew. Here's the translation. "The Palestinian people has declared war on us, and we must respond with war. Not an operation, not a slow-moving one, not low intensity, not controlled escalation, no destruction of terror infrastructure, no targeted killings. Enough with the oblique references. This is a war. Words have meanings. This is a war. It is not a war against terror, and not a war against extremists, and not even a war against the Palestinian Authority. These two are forms of avoiding reality. This is a war between two people. Who is the enemy? The Palestinian people. Why? Ask them. They started it." Mm-hmm. All Palestinians all Palestinians are, according to this person, and the incoming justice minister agrees with him, enemies of the state. Behind every terrorist stand, stand dozens of men and women without whom he could not engage in terrorism. Actors in the war are those who incite in mosques, who write the murderous curricula for schools, who give shelter, who provide vehicles, and all those who honor and give them their moral support. They are all enemy combatants, and their blood shall be on all their heads. Why, how Old Testament of you! How collective punishment of you! Isn't that just lovely? Now this also, and here we go. Because he just wanted to make things clear. Now this also includes the mothers of the martyrs, who send them to hell with flowers and kisses. They should follow their sons. Nothing would be more just. They should go, as should the physical homes in which they raised the snakes. Otherwise, more little snakes will be raised there. Meanwhile, Nachman Shai, who is part of the opposition, said, "The demand to give Eilat Shekad the justice portfolio is like giving the fire and rescue services to a pyromaniac." Yeah. Israeli legislator Michal Rosen said Shaked is going and taking her place in the pantheon of the extreme right and represents an ideology where her own racism doesn't embarrass her. Via email, Luda pointing out, "Ooh, Bob, you dare question Netanyahu and not give him a standing applause? That means you're anti-Semitic. You're an anti-Semitic Jew hater. Anyone who doesn't support Israel is a terrorist lover who has a hard on for bin Laden." That's the way it's often painted. Of course, nothing could be further from the truth. Yes. Devin asking, and you know, all I can say is you'll have to ask the Israeli justice minister. Devin says, "So this makes me an enemy combatant in the war on Palestinians?" And remember, of course, Israel is our partner in peace. So we got that. Oh, and just so we don't wander off into the swamp too quickly, happy news from people being run down by cavalry in Tel Aviv to happy news. You may recall a couple of nights ago I mentioned the kind gift that arrived here from Brother Deacon Asa. Well, there's been a tasting going on. Nothing hardcore, just Mike and Carol Brady having a couple of sips at the end of the evening. Good news for tequila lovers. Wow, how's that for a segue? Only on Friday on the Front Porch. Back in 2014, the American Chemical Society funded a study. And the purpose of the study was to examine the particular sugars that are produced by the agave cactus, from which comes tequila, and also from which comes, what's the beer like? It's thick, it's syrupy. In the Haut, it's the drunk-making Oakley. It's called something else in Spanish. But anyway. There are particular sugars that occur in the agave cactus, and they are called agavins, or agavins, which is not to be confused at all with androgens. No, no, no. The androgens were the people who were commonly referred to as the Plantagenets. That would be the, you know, your Henry II, John King of England, Richard the Lionheart, you know, that bunch. That's androgens. These are agavins. And, like I said, they're sugars. And according to the American Chemical Society study, the agavins found in the agave plant are non-digestible. And so even though a sugar, they act as dietary fiber. And thus they do not raise blood glucose. Mercedes G. Lopez, Ph.D., one of the researchers on the paper, said, "We've found that since agavins reduce glucose levels and increase GLP-1, they also increase the amount of insulin." And GLP-1 is a hormone that prevents or slows, not prevents, but slows the stomach from emptying and stimulates the production of insulin. Mercedes Lopez continued, "Agavins are not expensive, and they have no known side effects except for those few people who cannot tolerate them. They help people feel fuller, which leads them to eat less." Naturally, this was tested on mice, who, getting some agavins in their water, ate less overall and had lower blood glucose levels. You know, I'll reach for any handhold I can find when it comes to, right, tequila. Cheers. Right. So we got that going for us, which is good. Where else? What else? Up in Canada, Ron notes, "Loud and clear up here in the melting north, currently 85 degrees in Ottawa. I'm heading to the big desert tomorrow, where the high today was 102. Don't think I'll be getting up at 2 a.m. to listen to the show, so I hope you have a great week." Thank you, Ron, and safe travels and a speedy return home to you as well. Let's see. Where to go? What to consider? Well, since we had a little bit of medical-ish news there with the agavins, let's check on some other medical-ish news. Some of this stuff simply amazes me. Although I suppose that after 10 years of this, I should stop being amazed. Murder charges. Carmen King call themselves holistic doctors. According to KLAS TV, a bit of a cottage industry of a called Octozone. That's a little distressing. Never mind. No. So Octozone, it basically is the practice defined by them of injecting air bubbles into the human bloodstream via a machine which they were hustling for $4,400 a pop. Now, those of us with even a passing familiarity with some, with injections and things like that, yeah, we know that those are called air bubbles in the bloodstream are called embolisms. So Li Liu and her mother Kim Wong Liu flew Las Vegas, Nevada. Holistic Doctor and Stone offered to sell them their Octazone machine for $4,400. They said, yeah, it seems a little steep. So they said, well, I'll tell you what. We'll let you try it for $100 a piece. This Octazone treatment was promised to improve their health and kill pathogens in the blood. Bachman helped Ms. Liu administer an intravenous injection to her mama, who immediately began having a seizure and started vomiting. Then she briefly lost consciousness and woke up. Well, she died in the hospital of an embolism. That's about a holistic doctors, Bachman and Stone King, decided to absent themselves from their apartment. The long ball caught up with them at an extended day in Phoenix, Arizona stand. Another reminder, you know how alternative works? Medicine. Stuff is quackery. Deadly quackery. The two holes. Octazone is a water purifying device. The stupid. Sometimes it's beyond, sometimes it's not funny. Sometimes it's just deadly. But sometimes it is funny. Hence this trip down to old Louisiana Stan and a visit with Louisiana State Senator Elbert Guillory. There was a debate being had in the Senate of the state of Louisiana to repeal a really terrible law that lets creationism be taught side by side with evolution in science classes. This did not sit well with State Senator Elbert Guillory. And he's a believer in teach the controversy, even when it's not a controversy. The audio's not so good, so I'll just read the quote. There was a time, sir, when scientists thought that the world was flat, and if you get to the end of it, you'd fall off. There was another time when scientists thought that the sun revolved around the world, and they always thought to ensure that anyone who disagreed with their science was a heretic. People were burned for not believing that the world was flat. People were really badly treated. Knowledge only grows when people can talk about and have this intellectual back and forth, this discourse, with all ideas on the table. No, really. The creationist fundies are out there now arguing, yes, really, that it was the scientists who were burning people at the stake and not Holy Mother Church. He was eventually corrected by State Senator Jean-Paul J. Morrell, who noted that, no, the church locked up Galileo, not the other way around. But remember, members of the legislature, speaking in the course and scope of their legislative duties, have what? Yes, legislative immunity. So they can just lie and how many mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing, strychnine-handling, serpent-swallowing fundies heard that? That's right. That's right. Them demon-filled scientists burnt God-fearing, Bible-believing Christians at the stake back in the Middle Ages for not believing that the world was flat. Of course, there really weren't just a hell of a lot of scientists back then. A lot of priests. Not so many scientists. And please, believe me when I say, it was the priests who had the matchbooks with Draw Spunky on the back. Yeah. What else? Hmm. let's stay down south, take a trip over to Alabama. They've got a member of the legislature there by the name of Mac Butler. He has filed House Bill 592 in the Alabama legislature down on Goat Hill. He comes from the Gadsden area. And where in Louisiana, Senator Guilty was resisting the notion of removing creationism from being taught side by side in science class, well, representing Butler is going in the opposite direction. Right? Yeah. He wants the religion industry to be able to scrutinize any education in Alabama that discuss biological evolution, the chemical origins of life, and human cloning. Responding to this idiocy, Susan Watson, who is the executive director of the ACLU of Alabama, said, "This is a thinly veiled attempt to open the door to religious fanatics who don't believe in evolution, climate change, or other scientifically based teaching in our schools. It also opens Alabama to costly litigation that it just cannot afford." Mm-hmm. And I understand the gist and the thrust of that statement, but this is one of those framing moments. So, while she is not a member of the Horn Family Commune congregation, nonetheless, maybe we can help change the dynamic a little bit. Just, you know, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one stumble. Everything she says is true. It's the language. And this goes to show you how deeply religious faith infects even our language. This is a thinly veiled attempt to open the door to religious fanatics who don't believe in evolution, climate change, or other scientifically based teaching in our schools. How would it be better to say that? This is a thinly veiled attempt to open the door to religious fanatics who don't acknowledge the accepted science of evolution, climate change, or other. Because when we use that word believe, the most dangerous word in the English language, when we use that word believe, we're saying that science, we are tacitly acknowledging that science, peer-reviewed, rigorously subjected to the scientific method, is on a par with, or, and not just on a par, but the same thing as religious faith. Some elements of which, of course, are to be found, oh God, you know the list, that sin entered the world because the first woman had a conversation with a gossipy water moccasin, that the sun stood still in the sky, meaning that the sun revolves around the earth and not vice versa, that pi is equal to 3, just 3. Yeah. You get the idea. According to the National Center for Science Education, if Mac Butler's bill becomes law, the NCSE says it would undermine the integrity of science education in the state by encouraging science teachers with idiosyncratic opinions. That's a very nice and polite way of saying religious maniacs. to teach whatever anything they pleased and prevent responsible educational authorities from intervening. As is so often the case, this is not an isolated incident. This is the sort of dim-witted, bug-eyed, big-eared banjo-playing sister to Tennessee's monkey bill, and the same law that we mentioned a couple of minutes ago. That I mentioned a couple of minutes ago in Louisiana stand. Of course, then again, you can also argue that Susan Watson, the executive director of the ACLU of Alabama, sort of soft-soaped it, because if a bill like this, you got to wonder, if a bill like this is thinly veiled, what the hell qualifies as open and obvious in Alabama? That's right, children. Today we are going to dissect the frog. Don't worry, it's dead, and it didn't have a soul to begin with, so it's all right. God wants you to have that dead formaldehyded frog laying there, and you on the wax in the pan there. Take your little scalpels out, and you'll open the frog there, and there'll be bonus points for anybody who can find Jesus in the frog. And of course, frogs are not humans, and humans didn't come from no monkey. Oh, Lord God. It's always with the monkeys, because that goes back to the essential racism of evolution denial. Oh, golly Moses. I had another monkey story. Oh, well. That's okay. We got a different idiot we can go to. Lots of idiots this evening. It's Friday on the front porch. We'll just kind of weave in and out amongst the morons, even though it's not Monday. Welcome to you ever heard of Urban Alternative Ministry? Neither had I. But Tony Evans is a pastor at Urban Alternative Ministry. And Tony Evans has an explanation for what the problem is with black people. Mm-hmm. He says, and I'm not kidding, and this is a man of color, by the way, the biggest problem in black America today is the breakdown of the family. The breakdown of the family is unraveling us as a community. When 70% plus of your children are being born out of wedlock and the fathers are not there to tend to them, you've got chaos in the community. That's crime. That's unemployment. And most of these kids are going to be raised in poverty. So, and that's something we control. That's something we control. The white man is not making you do that. He's not forcing you into that position. That's a convenient out. In slavery, what are you going to do? First law holes, Pastor Tony. First law holes. In slavery, when we did not have laws on our side, the community on our side, the government on our side, the broader community on our side, our families were a lot stronger. We were a lot more unified, and we made a lot more progress. We're going through regression right now, and a lot of that is because of decision-making we are responsible for. Yeah. Life was ever so much better for people of color in this country back when white people were able to own them. The hell do you need? What the hell do you need white supremacists for when you got this guy carrying the water? Marty noting, Pastor Tony, another Bill Cosby. Oh, Lord, Lord, Lord. So, we've got a pretty clear picture, do we not, of where this country stands in terms of its ongoing struggle with issues of ethnicity, race, and disprivilege. Well, how about we wander out to Colorado? This kind of makes you want to hang the stand on the back of it. Out in Colorado, there's a barbecue joint. It's called Rubbin' Butts BBQ, RUBBINBUTTZ. Clever. The two people who own Rubbin' Butts BBQ are Edgar Antillon and Miguel Jimenez. And they're tired of all this black history. I mean, they got a whole month. So both of these Hispanic men have announced that Rubbin' Butts BBQ would have a white appreciation day in which they will give 10% discounts on all orders only to white customers. Really? That whole civil rights movement thing, lunch counters, water fountains, universities, grade schools, church bombings, dogs, fire hoses, Edmund Pettus Bridge, Mississippi burning. Never happened. Or at least Edgar Antillon and Miguel Jimenez never heard of it. Antillon said, we have a whole month for Black History Month. We have a whole month for Hispanic Heritage Month. So we thought the least we could do was offer one day to appreciate white Americans. Of course, this may not fly with the government, you know, the jackbooted thugs who will put their jackbooted boot heels down on the hard-working entrepreneurial small business necks of these two. Can you be Hispanic and a redneck at the same time? Apparently you can be Hispanic and a jackass. But it is illegal in Colorado, as it is in the rest of the nation, to discriminate against people and in a place of public accommodation. Again, Civil Rights Act. Just saying. Oh, well. Freedom, right? Sure. Do we have stuff to talk, do we have enough stuff to talk about during the front porch yet? I would hope so. really hope so. But wait, because, you know, it's all just one long Ronco commercial, isn't it? But wait, there's more. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, Chris Kyle was an American hero. We all know it because Clint Eastwood done make the movie about how he was out there killing all them brown people for murka. You remember the controversy of a couple of months back with American Sniper, right? Well, Chris Kyle died for your freedom, just like Jesus died for your sins, right? So, a former RT news anchor by the name of Abby Martin disagreed and disagrees that Chris Kyle was any sort of a hero. And she wrote a book, and she made a T-shirt and took a picture of herself wearing the T-shirt and just said, "Fuck Chris Kyle." Well, the God-fearing, Bible-believing, grace-saved followers of Christ jumped up to defend Chris Kyle. Chris Kyle's an American hero who is an easy target because he is no longer alive. Abby Martin is just a coward hiding behind the freedoms that our military has granted her when she was born on this great land that we call the New United States of America. Any of that sort of jangle you? I haven't seen the little box on a birth certificate that says, "Freedom granted to little baby, fill in the blank, by the new United States military." In fact, the United States military is an entirely subordinate institution in this country, at least in theory. It's supposed to be managed by the President and the Congress. In fact, the framers of the Constitution and the founders of this nation loathed nothing quite so much as the idea of a standing army. She has, of course, been identified as a liberal. And here's one of the most, now, I'm going to use a word here. I don't like the word. It is not part of my ordinary conversation, but this is one of those journalism moments. Because when even on a website, it's reported with asterisks, Well, let's see. One commenter said of Ms. Martin, "Let's put on our raping shoes and find this bitch." And do let's please remember, Chris Kyle died for no one's freedom. He was a disturbed dumbass who at a gun range handed a loaded firearm to another mentally ill veteran. It's almost like suicide, isn't it? But that wasn't the feeling of Jamie Lugo, who wrote to Ms. Martin, and I apologize again for the words. "Fucking cunt. How dare you disgrace his name like that? He gave his life so you can have yours. Fucking bitch. Don't worry. I know where you live thanks to your IP address. And don't worry. I'm a Marine. So you won't see me coming. I'm going to cause you pain
beyond your imagination. Tick tock. Time's running out. So see, here we have the essential disconnect between freedom of speech as we understand it on the so-called left. Ah, what left? And the way it's understood by right-wingers. Freedom of speech is something that only right-wingers have. If Pam Geller, for instance, wants to go down to Garland, Texas, and run a money hustle, which she hopes will get some Muslims killed, and does, there's not a damn thing we can do about it. Because, well, free speech is just that way, and gosh almighty, freedom's a messy business, and here in our democracy, we just have to put up with that kind of things, those kinds of things, because it's the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, ever. And of course, freedom! Right? Yeah. So when a person says something the right wing doesn't like, they don't have any problem at all, and no one does anything about them when they say these things, with threatening the life of someone whose speech they don't like. But on the other hand, if you try to point out that maybe, yeah, you know, when the guy writing the manifesto says, and I was inspired by Bernie Goldberg and by Michael Savage and by Bill O'Reilly, and he actually signs his name to it before he goes and kills a couple of people. See, that's just too attenuated. So, hate speech, okay. Criticism of anything about the vile, vulgar, hateful, bigoted, bloodthirsty, murderous right wing in this country, intolerable. Abby Martin went on to write, very telling that the Chris Kyle fans who tell me he died for my freedom to wear clothes are threatening to rape and kill me for free speech. Well, of course, Abby. Have you not figured these people out yet? Jeebus. Never a dull moment. And this is a frightening nation. Because in part, it is a frightened nation. Yeah. Frightened indeed. Coward nation. COWERED. Coward nation. It's about 6 minutes before the hour. Time for us to crank up the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that is Friday on the front porch on the horn. You know, of course, there's the gizmo line, and we generally reserve that for Kevin and or Bill. But on the Skype, because both of them have a hard time. Well, they just can't use Skype. If you can use Skype, however, and you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, feel free to jump on board via our kind and genial and long-term Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator, Sparky, by sending him on Skype a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc. And you, too, will be part of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Okie dokie, okie dokie. And thank you very kindly to Michael for jumping in on the fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly. We are now halfway to our fundraising goal for the evening. Thank you very kindly. And I got a little treat here. I was, some of you from years back may recall a good friend of the program, a drummer, a musician of considerable, formidable abilities, our buddy Lee, who was out in Austin. Well, I heard from Lee the other day, and I've been following the band in which he plays for a while. And they're getting ready to go out on tour. This month, the band with which Lee plays, Charlie Pierce and Choctaw Wildfire, are opening with no less than Billy Joe Shaver, which is awfully cool. And so Lee sent me a YouTube video of Charlie Pierce and Choctaw Wildfire, in which he plays drums. Deep Water Down is the name of the cut. I hope you enjoy it as much as I have. Thank you to Sparky for sending it along to me. Lee's still out there listening to the podcast, by the way. He just can't listen live because, well, this is kind of in the middle of work hours, right? I got a note from him saying, he said, I'm about 20 minutes into yesterday's show, maybe a few minutes into the lead topic on nails. Right about the time you started talking about taking Agnes to meet the kin folks and see lunch number F on the Mexican restaurant menu, the hackles on my neck went ballistic. I just watched a bunch of stuff on human trafficking. Guess the nail techs are luckier than the field workers in Sales, the John Sayles movie, Silver City. And yes, snakehead equals coyote, and both are horrid parasites. In fact, I'm reminded by Texas Betsy that Lee once sold blood plasma to help support the horn. It's true. It is absolutely true. I also had a note from Texas Betsy regarding yesterday's program. And it is part and parcel of the nails story out of the New York Times. The second part of that story was in today's paper. Might want to catch up with it. But Betsy says, only 24 minutes into last night's program, but I'm sort of surprised that you're shocked by anything in the New York Times article. I wasn't shocked. It's just every now and then you get slapped in the face with it. And it is a bracing reminder of just how brutal this country's embrace of the crushing embrace of capitalism is and can be. Anyway, Betsy continues, as a teacher of immigrants for 25 of the last 26 years, none of it shocks me. When I teach concepts like elapsed time and multiplication of decimals in an English as a second language math or students with interrupted education math class, I always use time cards and money as the example. And I tell kids that they must know what their paycheck should look like before they can be able to protest it if they're cheated. I tell them that poor math skills and inadequate English will guarantee that half the bosses they encounter will cheat them. Invariably, someone tells me about the employment discrimination or outright thievery that their mom, dad, sister, brother, aunt, uncle, or cousin experienced on the job just last week. And then a classmate shares the same story. And another classmate shares a similar story. Then I turn all commie socialist and teach them about the labor rights that they have and the ones they should have. but that they'll never avail themselves of those rights until they can argue with the boss in English and have the math facts to back them up. And by the way, since many of my kiddos start working on weekends at a young age, these conversations typically start in sixth grade. Anybody want to tell me about that socialist president we got? Yeah, that's what I thought. And thank you, Anthony, for jumping in. We draw ever closer to the evening's fundraising goal. Thank you very kindly. Anthony says, it's been a while since I've been able to chip in, so please accept it and change in honor of my beloved Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now and forever. Wait a minute, I have to do that with a reverb. The greatest country in the world on earth now, forever, today. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you. So enjoy a selection from Charlie Pierce and Choctaw Wildfire with our dear buddy Lee on drums, Deep Water Down, live.
The ocean's up, the ocean's down, waves rolling in, waves rolling out, sun in the sky still burning us down. With the sea of blood, it's growing now, people getting restless just waiting around. It'll drive them all crazy, they'll take it down. This time it's gonna be different. This time we're coming for you. This time you left no doubt in our minds about the evil work you do. Going in, the money come out. Platform explodes, the oil raining down. Cover it up, keep the cameras away. There ain't no oil spilling from that well today. Cameras go down, the numbers come up. They're biding their time, passing the buck. If it's everyone's fault, there's no one to blame. String them by their neckties, let them bastards hang. It's gonna be different. This time we're taking you down. This time the hole that you're digging is 6 feet underground. Start to lie and deceive. You can buy at the web, hell, you bought our TVs. But we ain't stupid, we'll never believe. This time it's gonna be different. This time we're taking you down. This time the hole that you're digging is 6 feet underground. This time it's gonna be different. This time we're coming for you. This time you've left no doubt in our minds about the evil work you do.
Oh, my goodness. I think that's going to have to go into the rotation. Deepwater Down Live, Charlie Pearson, Choctaw Wildfire, Lee Potter on bass, Lee Potter on drums, and Bob Cullen on bass. Nice, but you know, for live, that's a really nice, rich mix too. That was just yummy. And if you want to get find more awesome Choctaw Wildfire music and free downloads, you can just buzz on over to ChoctawWildfire.com, ChoctawWildfire.com, all one word, ChoctawWildfire.com, music, free downloads, it's all right there for you, and it's all that good, too. Yeah. Hopefully, maybe sometime soon, Lee can call in and tell us where he's going to be and where they're going to be playing and what kind of fun he's having out there on the road. Because the one nice thing, you heard the audio. I got to watch the video. And it was pretty obvious that our buddy Lee was just having a damn fine time as he played. It is Friday on the Front Porch, by Jove. And let's see, we have about $90. About $90 to go on this evening's fundraising goal. Hopefully we'll take care of that in the next couple of hours. But in the meantime, let's run over to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and see what kind of conversationalists we have for the evening's Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening. I can tell you where they're going to be on tour.
Oh, yeah?
I had a little conversation with Lee the other night. They're headed to New Orleans in 2 weeks. And then after that, they're going to play Memphis, Kentucky, St. Louis, Chicago. And then on the way back to Austin, they're going to hit Dallas and Oklahoma City on the way. And he says other tours to follow, no doubt.
No
and
Beckley, then, West Virginia on the list, huh?
No, but he says they might be out to Nevada at some festival in the near future. He's going to let me know. But Lee's an old-time member of the Horn Malloy Skype group.
Yes, he is.
We even had a emotional reunion one night between him and Liberal in South Carolina. They were both in the Army together during Desert Storm, in the Army band in Saudi Arabia.
So they really was a reunion. They really knew each other.
Yeah, they really did.
That's only at the Horn, right?
Right.
A couple of nights ago, through the good offices of our good friend B-Rez, who did the voiceovers for some of our intros years past, gave me a call and said, "Bring Agnes and Ferg." He said, "I've got comps for you for a show tonight." And so I got to. Do you remember the band Living Color from the late '80s? That song Cult of Personality. Well, we got to meet the lead singer for Living Color, an awesome vocalist by the name of Corey Glover. And Living Color has a new album coming out in the summer. So we'll probably be having a conversation with him somewhere along the way, which will be really, really cool because the minute I told him, I said, "Yeah, I do progressive, you know, liberal conversation radio." He said, "Oh man, I am so down with that." He said, "Because you know we've got a social conscience and we want to get out beyond the music." So I think that'll be a good conversation, and I'm looking forward to it. Let's check in with other folks in the room. Good evening on the eve of your departure. Good evening, Ron in Canada.
Hi, Bob.
How are you? Have you done confession with Reverend Craig yet?
I'm building up to it. Right now I'm having a bit of a communion session with some really nice Cabernet from someplace in Chile, some small village that I really need to visit. But that's foreplay. I'll get there later.
Well, you know, you got to work up a few sins to be forgiven for by Reverend Craig.
Yeah, but the tough part is being a Presbyterian. You just keep accumulating this stuff. I've often thought about converting to Catholicism, just so I could confess it, get it off my shoulders, and walk off a really light step and start all over again.
Yeah, because there's nothing like that clean. It's like having a package of brand new notebook paper. You just think of all the stuff you can put on it.
Yeah,
getting that slate clean.
I'm always open to new experiences, but I keep finding I enjoy the old ones so much. I just keep repeating them.
Well, you know, you play to your own strengths, right?
Son, I'm so strong in some areas, I couldn't talk to you about it.
And I have found out that somewhere in your future, the decision is not clear, but at some point in time, you will be the proud owner of a horn bumper sticker for your automobile.
I've heard that. I don't entirely trust the source, but that's because they're within the family, so to speak. And in the family, we wait until the deed is done before we give credit.
Well, that's more than understandable. I'm just thinking maybe for the next time you wander down this way, just having possibly thousands of cars seeing that on the back of your automobile, who knows what could happen.
I'm hoping it arrives in the mail before I head south the next time. I'm hoping to head south sometime over the next month or so. And I intend to enjoy the brief interval of time I've got to the max.
Well, indeed. And so you are off to the blazing sands again?
I am. It was a trifle warm there today. They said, well, summer's still 2 months away. And I think I get on an airplane again coming home next Friday night Saturday morning at 2 a.m. and get it home at around 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. And then I'll go to church Sunday morning, only because I have the opportunity to do it and not confess to anything, and then try to get the lawnmower started. I got a busy schedule, Bob. I'm a busy man.
You are a busy man, Ron. A very busy man. Well, let's bounce over to the other side of my the other side of my little screen here, and check in. We'll come back to the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, but let's check in. I trust we have Kevin and Bill.
Yep.
Yeah.
How are you fellas this evening?
I'm doing good.
Relative to what, Bob?
No, understood, Bill. Understood.
Yeah, well, things are good around here to speak of. They're moving right along on putting out this album for me of the stuff that I forgot I did, Bob. And I'm back to wearing the skinny brim hat again.
Nice.
Bob, it just depends where you grow up, you know, and when.
Well, a lot of prison.
Somebody gave you those Watershine Stetsons. The Killer Stress thing, you have, I think you had a copy of that where I'm...
Yeah, I do.
1930s all the way. Yeah. God. White suspenders, for Christ's sake.
I don't know. I thought they were rather dapper.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what people expect. If you're a blues musician, you're supposed to dress like some kind of a gangster or a hoodlum. Except the boys from Texas were a little nicer. And I said I had the privilege of Jim Wilson stopping in to hear us work with his drummer, Christina, Frank Christina, and having to stand next to that guy and play, that's a test, buddy, I'll tell you. And, thank you. I hadn't had any camp spectator or anything that day, you know, or for keeping a lot of the wrong stuff. Because that's a story about Louis Armstrong, you know, according to legend, in fact, Louis hit one of those high seas over high sea and had an accident. And after that, he drank a drink called Swiss Chris, which was a laxative. And he never went on stage again after that and had the same problem. So that, you know, this is stuff that has been written about by professional writers.
I had another...
Wait, continue, please, Bill.
Yeah. And I went to, a blues festival, the second one. I was sitting at a table at breakfast with a guy named Paul Oliver, who has written several books about blues. And he's a good writer. And he, you know, God almighty, he was a time and a place, but that's another story. Let's get down to business here. Business, as my friend would say.
So, but let me ask. So this, what is the status of this compilation disc, Bill?
They're looking at August to September. I actually live so long, I hope. And, because they're digging out stuff, and the guy's talking to every musician I ever worked with, except the two that are deceased. And, which isn't bad when you consider they're all musicians, and I was the oldest at, and I'm 72 now. When my age matches my IQ, you know, you know. Anyhow, that's the story. I've talked enough. Get down to some serious political and social work here.
All right, sounds good. Was that you I heard, Flavio?
Yeah, no. The problem was that I had, when I called on the Skype line, I had a media player going, and the Linux movie player listening to you online, and I forgot to turn that off when I tuned in on Skype, and I know, I'm just like, I am totally all thumbs. I apologize.
No worries. I didn't notice it at all.
That's okay. Everybody has that at first.
The senior moments.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's more like the newbie moments.
No, I'm just appalled at the reaction to the awarding of an award. God, that sounds redundant. To the people at Charlie Hebdo. You remember the guys that shot up in on the 7th of January, and all the left, well, not all the left, 204 of them, among them Francine Prose,
right,
Michael Ondaatje, the Canadian writer,
and what award?
It was the what was the name of it? I have it right here. Hold on. The James C. Goodale Freedom of Expression Courage Award at Penn. You can't get more left than Penn. Poets, essayists, and novelists. Founded in 1921 in England to promote freedom of expression the world over. And you have these idiots that, among them Doonesbury, Trudeau criticized Penn for awarding them a freedom of expression award. Francine Prose, I don't get that. I mean, I'm a man of the left. My family fled Brazil while it was still under the dictatorship of the military. My grandfather, on my mother's side, who was Italian, actually saw Clara Petacci and Benito Mussolini hung by the heels shortly after they'd been shot.
Yep.
In Milan. And I don't get the political correctness. I'm a man of the left, but I can't stand ideologues of the left or the right. Can you explain that to me? Why is it that you have people in this country that are well-meaning?
Well, I don't know that I'm all, Flavio. I don't know that I'm always willing to accord the status of well-meaning to this sort of thing. I mean, by comparison, I saw an article oh, a couple of days ago. In fact, I think it was on your Facebook page, wasn't it? The Black Agenda Report article about how Bernie Sanders is just another stooge, or Bernie Sanders is sheepdogging.
I didn't agree with that.
And all it told me was that there's still a fundamental not misunderstanding, but non-understanding of the nature of the political process in this country. I would love to have a parliamentary system. I'd love to have a million different parties out there and watch the mayhem and chaos of periodic attempts to form a government. David Cameron and the Conservative Party won such a resounding and unexpected victory yesterday in the UK that he doesn't have to make a coalition with anybody. And apparently all the predictors, all the mavens, all the pundits, all the Svengalis blew it. That was supposed to be a close election. But anyway, in a parliamentary system, you have multiple parties and you try to form a government after an election. Well, and the other thing is that puts party philosophy ahead of individual party personality politics. And that's all fine by me. But when you say that because he has chosen to run as a Democrat in the primary process, Bernie Sanders is a sheepdog or some sort of stooge or you know, whatever.
A shill.
Because you want a pony? As Grant said last week on the program, I think, well, hell, Bernie's running. I Want a Pony is finally on the ballot in a place where it makes the difference. Because, see, Jill Stein, for whatever, you know, and she's got good policy positions, Jill Stein ain't never, ever, no, never, no how, no way, and not even in any of those alternate universes we were talking about a couple of days ago, gonna be president of the new United States of America.
Not even if I smoke enough dope, it's not gonna happen.
No, and nobody's gonna wake up with unicorn sparkle pony helium filled pants in the morning either.
No. No, this is what's crazy.
But I mean, it's fun to
Can I quote Obama? Can I quote Obama?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you remember? You know, and don't get me wrong. I realize that he is part of the Chicago machine. He was groomed.
We don't even have to say that. We'll leave the right wing to do all that. He's part of the Chicago.
But you know, I have several disagreements with him, but I will agree with him on this. Let not the perfect be the enemy of the good. I really like that talk that he gave.
Well, but that's not his. He took that from way back. I forget whose idea that is.
That wasn't his.
No, not by a long shot. No.
No, but that's true. What do you call it? Throwing the baby out with the bathwater? I mean, can we get some consensus? I mean, in a democracy, you can't always get what you want. Oh, there's that song again in my head. You can't always get what you want. Sorry about that.
Yeah, okay, no singing.
Okay, so you can't always get what you want in a democracy. Everybody has to give a little.
Democracy? What? We've had this conversation. That word, no, we do not refer to the United States of America on this program as a democracy because it's just patently not.
No,
true.
It's not a democracy. It's not a democracy. That's the whole point. Because I think that we have ideologues on both sides, and instead of coalition building, we have people. Well, can I quote another person?
Go right ahead.
It took me a while to agree with this because I happen to be somewhat of an ideologue myself. I apologize, but we always want to stick to our guns. but Norman Goldman has a good point in that we have to eschew labels. We have to avoid labels and just talk about the planks on the platform.
Yeah, well, that's why I mentioned policy-oriented politics as opposed to personality-driven politics.
The latter
version of that being this idiotic quest in the United States for a president with whom one would like to drink a beer.
Oh God! Oh, that makes me puke. That made me puke a little in my mouth. I'm sorry.
It happens. It happens. Let's see. Let me check in here. By the way, Gerald is devastated to know that there will be no unicorn sparkle pony helium-filled pants. I'm sorry, Gerald. I'm sorry.
There are no pink elephants?
No. Those you can have with the right amount with the right amount of old panther piss. You can have all the pink elephants you want. Let's check in. Good evening. Good evening, Rick, down in Southern California.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
It's a little warm here in the Horn Studio sauna, but I think we'll make it.
Well, I guess as long as it's below 90, you're okay, right?
79.9 in here right now.
Okay, well, there you go. I'm below 80. Not too bad at all. So I got my... I did some Seventh Guild navigation going through the wormhole, and now I have I'm fully connected here. I don't have to switch around. I've got extra USB ports now, so I'm good.
He no longer has to use the weirding module.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I'm all set. I liked your shows this week. They were good.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to remember the one that was the funniest. I think it was the, I don't know. A lot of weird stuff going on, you know. It's so weird I can't remember everything, you know.
Well, that's the thing, Rick. I mean, there's everybody and their cousin. There's a top 10 list, and everybody and their cousin talks about it. And why rehash that?
Yeah.
When you can point out all these little signposts that individually are all, next to meaningless, but understood collectively, are great big blinking neon billboards that read, you know, we're screwed.
You got it. Yeah. We are, unfortunately.
I'm sure everybody and their cousin, for instance, is going to be talking today about President Not Sure's speech at Nike in Oregon today. Which apparently have a lot of progressives absolutely hooting like barn owls and tearing at their clothing. Yeah, me among them.
Hmm. What did he say? I didn't catch that.
Well, he went out to Nike World Headquarters in Oregon.
Right.
To hustle the TPP.
Oh, that's right. Oh, jeez.
And the CEO of Nike is a fellow named Mark Parker. And he stepped to the microphone and said, why, if we pass the TPP, we're going to create 10,000 Nike jobs right here in the new United States of America.
Oh, jeez.
Which will have no impact on the fact that right now Nike has children as young as 10 working for about 60 cents a day in miserable labor conditions in places like China, Indonesia, and Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean these claims of new jobs, I mean, I just have to think back to all the thousands of jobs that Keystone XL was going to supposedly create, and it's like a total of what, another 50 full-time jobs once the project's constructed, you know. Yeah, I mean, these trade deals, I mean, the middle class, always working class, middle class always takes it in the shorts. I mean, you know, it's like that giant sucking sound that NAFTA emitted. You know, this is no different. And in fact, I've heard that it's NAFTA on steroids in terms of some of these provisions, as far as having these corporate courts that basically,
that's the one that just that gives me the dribbles thinking about it. You know, wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning in a sweat. I mean, our courts aren't much removed right now as it is, Rick, from being corporate courts.
No, no, they're not. And in fact, the private court system, the arbitrations that occur to, you know, speed things up, where you don't have to, you know, go through the district courts or the state courts, and you just hire retired judges to, you know, do arbitration. I mean, that's, you know, those are big corporations, those arbitration companies, you know. So, yeah, we're not that far removed, unfortunately. I mean, why accelerate the decline by, you know, by passing the TPP? And, you know, unfortunately, you know, he seems to be, you know, the Senate seems to have cleared the way for, you know, for that to be considered, or at least to be negotiated, and then there'll be an up or down vote, and, you know, with no amendments.
Well, and see, that's the part. I mean, this was all just so cute, because at the podium, President Obama told the Democrats who are hearing that giant sucking sound, he said, "Just do it." See, he was at Nike. See what he did there.
Yeah, right.
On this issue on trade, I actually think some of my dearest friends are wrong. They're just wrong. And this is the part where, you know, really, on every progressive issue, they are right there with me, and then on this one, they are like whooping on me. I've run my last election, and the only reason I do something is because I think it is good for American workers and the American people and the American economy. I don't have any other rationale for doing what I do.
That's crazy. Here it is.
And I recognize that this is kind of a conundrum when you compare it, say, to the right-wing response to the Iran negotiations. Now, you have in the case of Iran, you have multiple nations negotiating with Iran about a nuclear program that may or may not, probably isn't, geared toward the acquisition of a nuclear weapon. And so, right, as progressives, we say, well, you know, you kind of got to let the process work. You know, it's not like we want cameras in the negotiating rooms and microphones. I mean, people have to have the freedom to have frank discussions and work all this stuff out. And we can see the reason of that. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And what's the alternative there? War? You know?
Right.
For the trade agreement,
you know, he said it's basically one great big trust me. And you remember that movie years ago? I forget, but Paul Newman was in it. It was about Earl Long. It was called Star. You know, about the stripper who became the lover of the governor of Louisiana.
Huey Long, yeah, that was a
no,
good
it was
one.
Earl. It was Earl. Earl, his baby brother.
Earl, okay.
But
okay.
There's some, and she cite early in the movie. She says, "I was raised in West Virginia, and my mama always told me the two most dangerous words you'll ever hear from a man are 'trust me,'
right,
or something along those lines."
Yeah, and that's a well-known joke referring to, you know, I'm a lawyer, trust me.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, two lawyers are walking down a street, and they see a beautiful woman coming toward them from the other side of the street. One lawyer looks at the other and says, "Man, I'd love to fuck her." And the other lawyer says, "Out of what?"
That's right.
Dirty joke, I apologize, but it's a lawyer joke, not a sexism
okay.
joke.
Okay,
but anyway.
Well, we're not regulated by the FCC, so you're okay there, Bob.
But where the TPP is concerned, if it's as awesome as they say it is, because this thing is apparently helium-filled sparkly pants,
mm-hmm.
Show it to us.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, isn't sunlight the best disinfectant? You know, right? If it's such a good deal, let's just, you know, let's all see its awesomeness, I guess.
Yeah,
you know, but you only get, you know, the only thing we found out about it is through, I guess, leaks, because of what was it, WikiLeaks or whatever, that, you know, kind of,
yeah,
at least got one or two articles. I don't know if they've gotten the whole. They haven't gotten hold of the whole treaty, have they? Or
Just enough to sort of point to how terrifying it is. Among other things, I didn't realize this. The economic impact of the 12 countries that would be signatory to the TPP is equal to 40% of the economy of the entire world.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
And
well, yeah. That's enormous. I mean,
Nike's going to create 10,000 jobs making shoes or something here, or jerseys or what. And I guess what we're going to, because we're going to have a level playing field, we're going to ship them all to China.
Yeah, right. Right.
So that some kid on the mean streets of Beijing can walk around with a Tom Brady jersey on.
I heard
on the Ed Schultz show that it was advanced manufacturing plant they're going to open. And Ed had Bernie on, and they just ripped the president for that speech.
Well, it's a pretty disingenuous speech, it seems like, Sparky. I mean, they keep telling us it's wonderful, but they won't tell us what it is.
Yeah, it's like they keep saying, show it to me.
I mean, I want to see the shiny object. I'm sorry, you know.
Show me the money. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as Marty notes via email, the fact that the president has flat out said, I really like Elizabeth Warren, but wow, is she just dead wrong on this one? I think most progressives probably trust Elizabeth Warren more on this and Bernie Sanders more on this kind of thing than they do him.
Well, you just have to look at who is supporting it. When Republicans are in favor of what you're proposing, it's not really a Democratic idea. I mean, just like Bill Clinton, his whole, triangulation strategy, which ended up really, screwing the Democratic Party, because he really, when he won president, except for the first election, all the other elections, he had no coattails at all. It's because he was not pursuing, Democratic types of policies. It was, Republican light. And when you're given a choice between the real deal and a light version of it, you're going to usually go with the real deal.
No disagreement here. And there's also, here's a question, and it's a question to which I do not have the answer. Because this will tell me which side of this issue I land on. Where does the United States Chamber of Commerce stand on the TPP?
Oh, I'm sure they've got to be in favor of it, Bob. It's a big giveaway.
Then I'm against it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's actually a very good, lodestar to use, is that a correct use of the word? I'm not sure, but it's sort of, I guess that's a lodestar to determine whether or not it's a...
It's either a lodestone or a pole star.
Oh, there you go.
Go ahead.
No, go, Bill.
Japanese car builders, German car builders, they got some big plants in this country. Volkswagen builds cars here, Japanese build cars here. And the Chinese don't invest any of their money in helping money made in this country. And Japan, my God, I would get enough TV work for you. Worked on Japanese televisions was you. A lot of times you had to buy your parts from Sony if you're working on a Sony.
Because there was no aftermarket stuff.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They didn't want you to fix stuff. Buy a new one. Throw the other one out. But don't fix it. I was a car guy that if it wasn't rusting out, I'll fix it. As long as it's drivable, I'll fix it. My ego did not depend on what I drove. Thank you. I guess that you can do that when you're a musician. You got enough ego salving or salving on a nightly basis, maybe it's different, you know. But, I mean, just this idea of, you know, buy here, work here, get paid good, spend here, and make it here, because every time there's a, every job that is made here, something is made here, you're turning the wheel for a fellow citizen of this country. Now, let the people overseas buy what they make and let their lives improve, so to speak, you know?
Right.
I mean, we've had a history with China that I can quote you chapter and verse on that, and so can you, Bob. Those damn missionaries got in there and did a hell of a lot, didn't they?
They wreaked havoc.
Yeah.
They basically sold the...
was terrible. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's okay, Bill. It's Rick. They basically took all of the nice coastlines and the ports and so forth. That's where you get, you know, Hong Kong and Macau and all these other, you know, kind of city-states, so to speak. That's basically what the Westerners did to China. you know, in the, I guess in the 1820s, 30s on. I don't know exactly when it started, but I know it certainly started by the, had started by the 1850s, you know?
Yep.
So it's just,
you read about, Stillwell and Chiang Kai-shek, you see what he was. He was just a, and Bob, you were talking about legislatures. I was going to say, you want to see some fun? Watch the Taiwanese or the Korean legislature have it out on stage, so to speak.
It gets personal.
If you gave those guys pies, you could make a fortune. Tell me.
You know what you could do is you could put those the legislatures of Korea and Taiwan on like bum fights or something like that. I don't know if you guys ever saw that. That was horrible.
Well, hey, let me make sure and say good evening to Carol down in Australia.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Rousing discussion tonight.
Thank you. G'day.
G'day. You know, you guys were talking about the Hebdo thing in Paris?
Yeah.
To me, they're kind of like a commercial version of Pam Geller. You can't really mock and humiliate the underdog. That's not how it works. You're supposed to mock and humiliate the master. And most of their humor was really directed at humiliating a sector of society who was already on the bottom. And their attack started France down the American road. You know, they've passed all these laws now to turn France into aligning with the security state thing and collecting all the information coming across the internet there and phone lines. And so the French are kind of starting to freak out, but they got scared into accepting it because of the Hebdo thing. And then here comes Pam Geller, a few months later, and does the same thing, stirring up trouble and trying to provoke an attack to clamp down on the fear and get more laws passed.
Well, I'm deeply conflicted because on the one hand, you know, I'm all free speech. I mean, we say booger on this program, and I don't need humorless people in black suits and white shirts and skinny black ties talking to their wrists, blowing through my door here to say, you said booger. On the other hand, we haven't called for anybody to be killed yet, and we haven't deliberately tried to provoke any such attacks. As Mark Potok said the other night on the program, Pam Geller got what she wanted.
Yeah. That's her job. It's like a job to come in and be a provocateur in a society to herd people in the direction you want them to go.
And I want to be really careful, Carol, because I adhere, I ascribe to no organized religion, and I think rather poorly of the vast majority of them, because they strike me as mechanisms of social control to try to obtain power and authority. That having been said, for instance, we can point to any, and we do it every Wednesday night, point to any number of weirdo American preachers who say weird, disgusting things. It's an industry. What was it? James Dobson was asked not long back whether he still endorses something that he wrote in a book several years back, in which he said that something along the lines of most battered women provoke their attackers. And he wouldn't disavow it. Women deliberately bait their husbands. They're just begging to be hit. And, you know, this is from the same guy who wants parents to beat their children till they cry real tears, et cetera, et cetera. He's a monster, okay? He's a monster.
Yeah.
And he's a monster in the name of Christ. But he does not wield significant power in the United States, and there's no getting around that. He wields power over a significant minority of weirdos, and one of these days they may actually control the government. But they don't yet. They yearn for theocracy. They simply have not achieved it.
I might add to that, he has lost considerable power here in Colorado Springs, which is a good thing.
Well, he actually stepped down as head of Focus on the Family.
Yeah, but he still gets on his radio show and talks. You know, he's not completely silent. But Focus has had lots of layoffs over the past 5 or so years. I mean, they
screwed a lot of their workers.
Well,
okay, so compare that with the Grand Mufti of Saudi Arabia. Now, this is the head Muslim religious leader. This is the guy who issued a fatwa saying that it was okay to marry off little girls under the age of 15 to, you know, dirty old men. Well, apparently, and some of this stuff doesn't necessarily come out fully comprehensible, because, after all, Saudi Arabia is a clamped down authority state where freedom really doesn't live. But the Grand Mufti, and I can't see anything to tell me that this is parody, because when I read it, it was like, this has to be parody. But it apparently isn't. The Grand Mufti, who is the religious enforcer for the Royal House of Ibn Saud, and who is the a religious authority figure who dictates what people shall believe and shall not. He is not subject to challenge, not subject to interpretation. He is more infallible than the Pope. Well, Grand Mufti Abdul Aziz bin Abdullah recently declared that, via a fatwa, and we might want a hockey puck for this and some duct tape, that it is permissible to Allah for a man who is in great hunger, afflicted with a severe hunger, to cannibalize his wife. No, really. Because it will allow the couple to become one as their bodies will fuse together after the husband eats his wife. Now, to make sport of him or to criticize him is not, Carol, to criticize the underdogs, as you noted in France. This is a man of tremendous wealth and power. And because of what he said, somewhere out there, some poor Saudi woman is going to get murdered and killed and eaten by her freak, sicko husband.
That's a really nice sect. I hadn't heard about that one. It's interesting.
Well, he's the head of the Wahhabis, and the Wahhabis are the dominant official state-sponsored religious sect of Saudi Arabia.
I know. They're the worst throwback representation of something that's really a political movement. It's not religion. It's just a facade.
They make the Shia look like a bunch of Unitarians. How do you respond to that? I mean, if it became news that a little internet broadcaster in the United States had said that Grand Mufti Abdul Aziz bin Abdullah is a booger-eating, murderous, bloodthirsty, sick freak, would they all be standing there in the public square yelling "Bruga Bruga" and demanding my head? And I point this out by saying, I don't know what the solution is.
Well, the solution is to have more frank discussions about mental illness. You know, they act like their religions are exempt from a discussion of the origin of their roots and the effect of their roots and the fact that it's a twisted, psychologically twisted version of a more benign thought, you know, which a lot of the religions at root aren't these twisted things that they've become. They didn't start out that way. They get polarized. They get taken over by psychop. And they're all at the same, I mean, they're all taken over by psychopathic ideas, but they're at different points in the arc. You know, the kind of crap that this allegedly imam person talks about sounds like something from the 12th century in Europe. I mean, they didn't codify it as a way for you to deal with your wife, but they had the same really distorted, bloodthirsty ideas about what humans are doing here. So they all seem to go through the arc of trying to destroy women. I'm still trying to figure out what everybody's so afraid of when it comes to women. Christ. But I'm just saying that...
Well, damn, you know, y'all only control the entire mechanism of life. And males generally are terrified of that.
And just barely. When we actually did try to take back control of the mechanism of life, we've been demonized for that. And women all over the South, I think of Texas. I lived there for a while, and it's just... It was a disaster then, and that was 30 years ago. And how women there are really, there's no access to abortion anymore. And the Calvinism is so stamped into the face of the country that they can't imagine that that's a catastrophe for everybody else. They think it's the women's fault, like they got that way by themselves. It hasn't changed in my lifetime that men take co-responsibility for what happens there. And then when we take control of it and try to say, okay, well, I don't want to have this child then because you're not going to be around when it's even born, then, you know, we're demonized as having done something hideous. You know, it's like men want to have it both ways. They want the virgin and the whore. It's, you know... We need to grow up and get beyond that. That's it's the whole world is out of balance with that meme. That's really screwing things up royally. So, but I'm also just trying to draw threads between the uprising of this anti-Muslim in general, the lack of discrimination people have between one version of the faith in one way it's practiced, and then the same alleged faith in another place is absolutely disastrous. So, you know, there's a pattern going on here. I'm trying to discern the pattern. I was wondering if you would ever consider trying to get a hold of Professor Stephen Cohen to come on and talk about his analysis of what all this is doing right now and where we are and who's pulling strings. He's usually quite frank. I don't know what his schedule is like, but...
It's worth the attempt.
Could you get your booking agent on that for you, Bob?
Absolutely.
You can fly him down on the Gulfstream 5 or whatever, right, Bob?
Exactly, and we'll bring him from Beckley International Airport over to the studios in the Maybach.
And can you bring Maharishi Jim in from Denver as well?
Well, he's pounding the pavement. Isn't he looking for a job now?
Yeah.
It's always fun to hear from him. When I hear you talk to him, I see his father in my mind's eye. And it's just so cool that, you know, his father got to stand up and fight back when he said, hey, this is a crock. And he was discredited, unfortunately, but I think the word got out, and that reinforced a lot of us who already thought it was a crock. So his father helped me a lot.
Yeah, I mean, the magic bullet theory, I guess, propounded by Gerald Ford on the Warren Commission. You know?
Who only Gerald Ford could think that that was a logical path for a bullet to take. I mean, you know, the whole thing about him falling down on Saturday Night Live? That's the way he actually was. I was living in D.C., and he was in the newspaper every week, you know, having fallen down here and fallen down there and on the golf course and stepping down into a ballroom and trying to mount the podium and tripping over it.
Just not naturally accident prone. It wasn't. It wasn't.
Sit, Liberty. Sit. True. Yeah.
It was like the comic act following Nixon. Nixon was such a monster, and then here comes this clown.
What was that, Bill? Bill, what was that?
Well, Ford played too much football with those soft helmets. The ones you could fold up and put in your pocket.
He was a leatherhead, wasn't he?
Absolutely, I'm sure there was brain damage. You know how that look when people can't actually focus their eyes right, the eyes kind of wander? He had those kind of eyes, like both of them weren't working it the same way. Very strange guy.
Who was that?
Ford. President Ford.
Gerald Ford.
Gerald Ford! Yeah.
I remember the day Nixon got on the helicopter like it was yesterday.
I was there. I was standing there at the White House fence. There were a whole bunch of war protesters down there. There were thousands of people hanging out waiting for that damn helicopter to take off. It took a long time. We didn't have our phones or anything to keep up with what was going on. We kept thinking maybe he was tunneling under the White House and trying to get out of town and he was going to rule from a secret cave in West Virginia or something.
I was sitting at the convalescent ward of Travis Air Force Base waiting to get out of the Air Force after my second knee surgery.
Wow, both of you getting out of your responsibility at the same time.
Yeah, I was just waiting for him to say, okay, you can go. I mean, it was so cool. I came back from Thailand in July, and then they messed me around for a couple days, and they put me on surgery standby. So they wheel me, they get me all doped up, wheel me up to surgery. And go, no, we can't do you today. They wheel me back to the orthopedic ward, and I sit there all goofy and from being drugged up.
That could be a fun way to spend a week.
Third time, though, they got me in.
Hey, Sparky, is it possible you were acting goofy without being drugged up?
Well, yeah, possibly.
I'm playing.
No, he was smart.
By the way, a quick little correction. Via Ron and Raleigh, it was Arlen Specter who posited the magic bullet theory. Not Jerry Ford.
Yeah. Yes, I stand corrected. Ford was on the commission, though. Ford was on the Warren Commission, though.
Yep.
But, yes, it was Spector's idea.
I think everybody that was on the Warren Commission is now gone.
Yeah. Yeah, when are we going to get the truth out, huh? When are the real documents going to come out? The real Zapruder film, huh?
They've probably all been burned.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be 50 years after the commission. And yeah. Now I think because the Kennedy supposedly, quote, the Kennedy family requested that it not be released until something like 100 years after. Oh, jeez.
A bunch of shit. That is so ridiculous. I mean, that and this whole TPP, if anything has to be kept that secret from Congress, you know that it is a total sellout. And how Obama can get on there and lie, the only thing really that can lie like that so convincingly is a psychopath. That is what they look
and,
like.
And here's, okay, so here's where we get into trouble. What you just said, Carol, if we had anything resembling a responsible Congress, I would say, amen, sister. However, and this is not me defending the TPP, I'm not going to do that. But if you were Barack Obama and you were the president of a country that had a national legislature as absolutely crazier than a sprayed roach at binging at a decon party as the Republican Congress is, if you had a Congress that was full of Ted Cruz's and Steve Cantaloupe's Kings and Louis Asparagus Gohmert's, who are already convinced that the Kenyan Muslim usurper is trying to build a series of bases, military bases in Texas where the military would be housed and Texas would be occupied, you know, Fort Hood, that kind of stuff that already exists. Would you really want to give the details of a complicated trade agreement to that Congress any sooner than you absolutely had to, knowing that Alex Jones is out there waiting to scream false flag, and that the TPP is actually a secret broadcasting station that's going to send a signal at light speed into space that will clue the Kenyan Muslim usurper people on Norblap 12 to invade Merca? Would you really want them to have those details?
Well, the thing is, though, that this template for this was set along 25 years ago when they started doing all of the trade deals in secret. And whether the Congress then was any smarter is questionable. But
let me go a little further back.
By definition.
But let me go a little further back in history, Carol. Let's talk about the treaty that formed the League of Nations. Now, Woodrow Wilson, with all his flaws, brought back an idea in the wake and ashes of World War I, almost 100 years ago, an idea for a League of Nations whose purpose would be to try to stem the violent impulses that had led to the First World War and the bloodbath that it was. A Republican senator, Bill, care to chime in? I bet you know the name.
Yeah, his grandson was a vice presidential candidate or something.
Henry Cabot Lodge became incensed with Woodrow Wilson because he, Woodrow Wilson, would not bow and scrape to Senator Henry Cabot Lodge of Maine over the League of Nations. And he almost single-handedly killed that treaty. And out of the hubris of Henry Cabot Lodge, you get the Second World War. So it's not like, I mean, how do you negotiate treaties in anything but something semi-secret? I mean, there have to be a group of people who hammer out the details, and then the treaty comes back to the United States for ratification in the Senate.
That group that hammers out the treaty needs to include representatives who are there to represent our interests. And most of our treaties in the last 30 years have only represented one side of the interest. And hence we have all the job shift.
Well, I mean, but who would be the representatives of those interests? The executive branch is in charge of foreign policy, and consequently, its representatives negotiate the treaties. I mean, the Senate doesn't get a say-so until the treaty is done. Never has.
But anything that affects the country as a whole should have input from elected officials who represent us.
I mean, that's
right
not,
now.
But that's not what the Constitution says.
Could I chime in here?
Yeah, jump in, Rick.
Yeah, you know, I think what Carol's getting at here with regard to these trade agreements is they're being negotiated by corporate lawyers, basically, and you know, because they're the only ones who are getting, you know, their hands on these proposed provisions of the TPP, and so basically, we've delegated our foreign policy to unelected. Representative,
unaccountable
corporate hatchets.
Unaccountable.
Yeah. Exactly.
And see, but
we don't even know their names. I mean, there's some about who some of the people are, but we know what corporations they represent, but we don't really know their names. They're like some kind of stamped out drone that goes into negotiation to make the corporations richer.
You might as well call him Mr. General Motors or Mr. Exxon or, you know,
whoever. That's
you know?
Entirely possible, but consider this. There are little choices we make that have, you know, it's like the stone thrown in the pond and how far the ripples go. After the presidency of FDR, we decided it would be a good idea to make sure that no president could ever serve more than two terms in office. Right? We amended the Constitution. Well, if you don't like the way that a president has appointed negotiators for a treaty, then under the system that was envisioned by Madison and Hamilton and the framers of the Constitution, the remedy is to vote them the hell out. But as President Obama noted today, talking to Nike, I don't have to run another election campaign, and then goes on to say, I only do things that will be good for America and the workers.
Hello, Bob.
Yeah, hey, Flavio. Wait, please, finishing a thought. If he can't run for a third term, then there is no way to impose that accountability that Rick was talking about. So, you know, out of Republican jealousy over the success of FDR, they screwed the country. Of course, that's what Republicans are best at, screwing the country. But I mean, there's a lot more here than meets the eye. I would love to know what is in the TPP, and I would like to know about it in concrete detail.
That's why I wanted to chime in.
Yeah, go ahead, Flavia.
That's why I wanted to chime in, because you heard of BNSF?
Yeah, Burlington Northern.
Burlington Northern, yeah, San Francisco.
Santa Fe,
sorry about that. I live in this beautiful city. You've seen the pictures, right?
Yeah.
This is Mississippi. I am in love with this city. I've always been in love with the city. La Crosse, Wisconsin, on the shores of the Mississippi. And I don't know if it was the city council or whatever, they approved BNSF laying track over our marsh, our beautiful marsh, where all the cranes and the geese and the the waterfowl, the just the beautiful animals that I love to see. And they got approval for that. And we're going to get bomb trains here, like Lake Megantic, like in North Dakota. Recently there was an explosion.
Yeah, in Tiny Heimdall.
Yeah. I don't like that. I don't want to be evacuated from my city. This is my city now. It's like, no, it's, they have no right to do that. And it really pisses me off. Comment. I'm not saying anymore.
Well, you know, Flavio, to pick up on that, you know, under the TPP, my understanding is that, you know, if a state or whatever, or even the U.S. wants to ban bomb trains or regulate them, they won't be able to.
That's exactly. The point. Exactly. That's the whole thing.
It's just like the federal law trumps the state law. This new TPP jurisdiction will trump federal law, including all of our environmental laws and any of our small, measly attempts at managing the ecology and trying to get away from grid networks and get more local with energy production. All those things will have to cease because they are threatening somebody's profits. What the hell kind of way is that to run the world? I mean, this is really, to me, this is the new world order. This is what it's supposed to look like, is a transparent and invisible structure running the economies of all the major countries, and eventually all the countries. China and America are both heavily invested in Africa right now, which is why they're having so much trouble. So this is really a opportunity to have hegemony over the entire world at a corporate level, upside-down pyramid, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Basically, the elites of the elites are going to be running things. Not that they don't already, but they're going to just have – they want it all, basically.
They
know?
Want it overt so that they don't have to mess around with courts here and there and, you know, be wasting all their lawyers' times fighting the obvious. They won't even have to fight it because an arbitration judge will decide that, yes, the corporation is right.
Right, again. They have rights under the treaty to challenge this particular state action or whatever.
And it's funny, America talking about treaties. We don't honor our treaties. We've had treaties to Indian nations all over the country that we have abrogated. So we're not really a very honorable party in treaties that we've already drawn up.
Right, and what we're pointing toward, and I'm not trying to be contrary in my points, but I'm trying to point out the structural inadequacy. If you're interested in democratic process, if you are interested in real input, there is a structural inadequacy in the way we do these things. Treaties,
yes.
in 1787, when the Constitution was drafted, treaties were not exactly simple things. They could be quite complex, and negotiations could go on for eons. But by virtue of the nature of life then and life now, they didn't have quite as much reach, if you know what I mean. This is 40% of the global economy, 12 nations. And I would like to know what's in the treaty, I also understand technically why it is that no amendments would be allowed to the treaty, because the other countries were, if you go amending the treaty, then you have to go back to the table.
Yep.
And either the president is or is not the official constitutionally charged with negotiating these things. If you want to have a true run out into the yard tearing at your hair and screaming and hooting like a barn owl moment, imagine John Boehner. No. Imagine Steve Cantaloupe's King and Louis Asparagus Gohmert as two of the negotiators for any treaty. Any.
Don't even go there.
No, Fabio. We have to go there. We have to go there. If we're we absolutely have to go there. If the president is not the authority in charge of negotiating treaties as the Constitution says he is, and the Congress wants in on the front end of the gig, then we're going to have to pull some chairs out because they are powerful members of the minority. We're going to have to seat. We're going to have to seat Steve Cantaloupe's King and Louis Asparagus Gohmert.
You're right there. What I meant to say was that it's just so ugly. I mean, if it's such a great deal, if it's the last best thing since sliced bread, why can't we know about it? That I don't get, and that's where I'm with Tom Hartman about that. Well, if it's such a great deal, why can't we know about it? Why can't we know what it entails? Well, and why do we have to learn? Why do we have to learn from WikiLeaks?
Well, I'm not playing devil's advocate. I'm trying to sort out things that are going on in my own head here, and I'm not trying to piss people off either. But how do you want to learn about it? If nation A says we want this principle, and nation B says no, we want that principle, does it need to be in the newspaper every day?
I think the scope of the whole thing is what needs to be understood. If it was just dealing with trade, like trade agreements are supposed to, instead of copyright law and all this other shit, people might feel a little more comfortable with it, but they realize that it's very far-reaching. It has a little to do with trade, but it has a lot more to do with everything else, which is controlling environmental laws and, you know, the wages you pay your people and the kind of stuff that we used to go for. We used to go for the competitiveness of our trade. That was the idea. And now we don't really have much to trade except armaments. We don't make anything anymore.
Movies.
Can I chime in as an international person?
We don't make
Brazilian? I just wanted to chime in as an international person. The Congress of Brazil just banned the labeling of GMOs in Brazil. But our newspapers shamed the legislators that sided with the GMO companies, Archer Daniels, you know all the people, what is it, Archer Daniels Midland, ConAgra, and they just went, oh, here are the legislators that voted against transgenic, that's what we call GMOs, transgenic labeling. And they put the names of the Congress people that voted against that in the newspapers. I thought that was really cool. Because before we had labeling. We had labeling of GMOs. And now we don't anymore, but still, the Brazilian Congress is just as bad as the US Congress. It's run by fascists, basically.
I think what Carol just said goes to the heart of it, though. If it were just a trade deal, there would be much less opposition. What we're talking about is the United States putting itself under subrogation, or whatever word you want to use, to, in essence, another entity. And trumping federal laws, our laws for the United States of America, go out the window under the authority of the TTP or the TPP. And therefore, we have lost that freedom, for lack of a better word, we've lost our freedom to be an independent country. We're no longer independent, United States of America. We might as well call ourselves the United States of the TPP.
Yep.
Exactly. Exactly.
And we're going to be subject to laws that we don't even know what they are yet. You could be fouling a law that has never been explained yet because it's still a secret. It's, you can't have a democracy when there's, and I know we shouldn't even say that, but you can't have any kind of freedom when there's so much secrecy in everything, in the courts and in the Congress and, you know, the spying networks that have gone up that, they've been around for a long time, but they're so sophisticated now they actually become threatening. But they also collect a lot more data than they can ever sift through, so nobody ever wants to talk about the nightmare job of trying to make sense of all this data. It's really mainly just kept as a store to be used as a bargaining chip against you if they ever have a need to go after you for something.
Precisely, and that's what the Second Circuit, you know, found. One of the things I think they found offensive with the, you know, the program, the Dragnet collection of all the metadata of your phone calls. I don't know if that decision is going to be upheld ultimately by the Supreme Court, but you know, at least that was a good development this week. I don't know that, you know, we can really spike the ball in the end zone at this point, but
well, I don't think you. No, it's just. It's too in medias res, Rick. I mean, to sort of paraphrase Jesus, the rats ye have always with ye. And if this thing goes up, and I'm sure it will, then the Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, and that Kennedy kid may well. Which way do you think they come down?
They come down in favor of the law, I think, you know, if it makes it up there. I mean, I can't see that.
Yeah, because the rules of interpretation and construction are pretty severely limited.
Well, it doesn't take a psychic to figure out what these guys are going to do. They're going to do what's in their best interest of the people that they believe in, which is not us.
Yeah, they're benefactors. They'll rule in favor of their benefactors, their corporate benefactors, basically.
Yep. Oh, Justice Tommy, he didn't do the right thing. How many years ago he did what benefited the people that supported him? Yeah, you can keep on these people. It's cheap labor, you know. Two words that make a lot of sense. Pardon?
Never mind. Go ahead, Bill.
Because it's this whole thing. My question is, they keep importing goods made in very cheap labor, but the employment picture gets worse here. Who's going to be here to buy this stuff? I don't see the prices coming down, do you?
No. Well, look, consider the numbers, Bill. How many pairs of Nike shoes do you suppose a 10-year-old Vietnamese child can make in a day?
Oh, 20.
Now, that child is getting 60 cents a day.
Yep.
The shoes are coming across the Pacific and selling for as much as $200 a pair. It would seem to me that from an accounting standpoint, paying American workers to do it would be negligible within, well, not negligible, but it's probably intolerable. And, you know, is this, what the hell was that line from the president of Nike today? Was that a carrot, hanging in front of the horse's nose? You know, I'll create 10,000 jobs if you'll pass the TPP. Or was that an implied threat?
Has everyone watched the movie The Corporation? It talks about the sweatshops in East Asia and about the pennies on the dollar that those people get paid. It was eye-opening. Did anybody...
Oi, Flavio. Oi, Flavio. Como vai você? This is Larry. The Corporation movie was done by a couple of Canadian documentarists, and they talked about, and they also produced a book that went along with it, and it talked about how corporations act like psychopaths.
Psychopaths, yeah, that's it.
And they also interview various stock traders or people who were on the worked in the stock exchange about how easy it was for people to move labor overseas. And how, you just move from, and it talked to various CEOs about how it was very easy to just go from one country to another. You make as much money as you can, in an Asian country or wherever else. And then when, the cost of actually, maintaining your workforce goes up, and you start losing profit, you just play another game of checkers or whatever,
and the race to the bottom,
where you can continually. So that's what the corporation is about: is how the corporation acts without regard to workers, without regard to anything in the world except for its own profit. Go on, Flavio.
Externalities. The race to the bottom. That was a really eye-opening movie. Thank you. That was Larry.
Yeah.
I saw that movie like 3 or 4 times because it was so good, and I love the lady that narrates it. She's so deadpan. You remember that?
Susan Sarandon. By the way, Carol's been talking about this very thing with the political pornography and the psychopathy of the ruling class and the governing classes in each of these countries.
Bill, remember how you were saying who's going to buy all this stuff?
Yeah.
Well, the way the psychopaths think, and they are in charge, they're the ones running Wall Street, which is where all the funneling is going. They don't need us anymore. The way they make money now is just by moving money and churning. They make a lot of money on trades. And because they're being taken care of by just quantitative easing and the fakery of the stock market, they don't care about who's buying goods. That isn't where the money is for them anymore. Their market is either overseas or is just a loan in financials. And that way of looking at a society is the quintessential thing that the corporation and political ponderology are all pointing out, was this is the end game of a psychopathic system, which is what capitalism is. It can't go on. It's built on illusion and fraud. And when it gets to the end of the line, there's just this huge scooping up of resources, assets going on, until it's pretty much game over. And they can move from country to country until they run out of countries that are stupid enough to lower their wages to make it profitable. And then people start to revolt, and that's when something like the TPP, which is kind of an overarching world government, is able to maneuver and manipulate societies to keep the ball rolling at our expense. Like what they're doing with Greece, you know, they're trying to break Greece down into small pieces.
So to simplify, what you're saying is churning means that these companies don't have to worry about producing products anymore. As long as they've got a tax structure or they don't have to pay taxes, and they keep on being bailed out by banks and being bailed out by poor people who are paying, you know, and by governments who give them their largesse. They don't have to make money off of actually producing goods, putting people to work.
They can just sit there and capital expenditures in the industries now is at its lowest in 100 years. They're not reinvesting in their country or in their companies or workers. They're buying back their own stock and inflating the price of it in order to reap larger salaries and bonuses. And they keep scooping like that. They're, every time a trade is made, somebody's making a billionth of a cent. And you do billions of trades, and it starts adding up. So it's just the huge economy.
People will take this forever, you know.
Yeah, so Rick,
people will sit here and think it because they also own the police, so, you know.
Mm-hmm. They've been playing it out for a long time.
So what's it going to take for
the
police?
Eventually the house cards collapses, and what's left?
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, it all collapses. And we end up where we ended up 100 years ago with a world war. And this time, just like Kill just said, it'll be game over because we now have nukes. And that's what
the world war today would light up society, that's for sure. And at the end of it. Yeah.
So world war happens after the capitalist or the financial interest, the rich people have squandered all of the wealth in each of their various empires, and they have no other way to screw anybody over. They've screwed everybody else over to the max, and people get angry, and then they rise up, or somebody rises up. And then you have a world war. I mean, I know I'm being simplistic, and I may not even be accurate, but, you know, I was wondering what Rick, if you're on, or what, you know, what you might say to what Carol and I were bringing up about the fact that the companies are just basically making money out of thin air, or making money out of...
Yeah, I mean, it's not even thin air. It's basically just by, you know, using a computer keyboard or just putting a series of digits on there, and all of a sudden there's, you know, wealth created. Well, not real wealth, but, I mean, you know, something that these, you know, companies can just trade. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the psychopathy of corporations. I mean, part of the problem with, you know, corporations are going to be naturally psychopathic. They're not people, for one thing, but I think even more importantly is the way that corporate law is written is, you know, the corporation's only concern really, you know, is making a profit and making the shareholders wealthier. And so there's no incentive, you know, to say, you know, the whole idea of being a good corporate citizen, it's such a crock because you know, corporations, you know, they're not citizens. They just, you know, they basically don't care about people. It's all about, you know, enriching those at the top.
But there's two different things here. You know, the corporation is just a structure. It's not an individual thing. It's a structure that people work inside of. And the people that work inside of them haven't always been as psychopathic as the ones that are there now. So this corporation, by definition, has to be psychopathic because it doesn't have a conscience. It's a thing. It's a structure. But the people that work in it are supposed to have a conscience, and that's what's lacking. It's not the corporation itself. It's the individuals that make it up, that run it, that have lost their ability to feel any conscience for the other humans in the
so in a business administration major where they have courses like, you know, Diane teaches business ethics, or they used to have a course called the social and legal aspects of business, or the social and legal environment of business. If they don't they teach how the company, I mean, what do they teach in a business ethics class, or in a social and political, or the legal and social environment of how a business operates?
I don't know if there are really rigorous business ethics classes. I've never been a business major, but if you have to wait until college to teach a person how to have a conscience, you're screwed. You know, I mean, that's part of the problem, is that this unconscionable behavior, as we say, is tolerated from an early age on. It's like having to have a discussion about whether bullying is okay. Hello? Bullying is by definition not okay. Why do we have to be talking about this? And those same people, when they get to business school, they might sleep their way through the ethics class. But a conscience is something that you're not really born with. It. It's something that you develop at an early age, I think. And the trick is holding on to it through your whole life, not just developing and getting a conscience, but actually keeping it exercised and useful throughout your lifetime. You know, all these people that say that they were fine until they got offered the big money. Well, that's what you're doing here, is to be a, have enough integrity in your life that your conscience isn't the first thing you're willing to give up.
We all make choices, and we've got to basically be responsible for those choices. And if we choose to, you know, basically totally sell out and give up our values and our ethics, then, you know, we're just not very good people, I guess, to make it sound real simple, I guess. I mean, what always amuses me, you know, I've had to take courses in legal ethics. I mean, that's part of the bar exam, is you've got to take a course in legal ethics. And I mean, if you've got to teach someone to be honest and ethical, I mean, that's, you know, you've lost the battle already. I mean, in some cases, it's not entirely clear whether a certain action is or isn't ethical. Like, you get into conflict of interest situations and, you know, that kind of thing. But, people make their choices, and they choose to take the non-ethical route. And, I agree, Carol. I think corporations, these days, you know, I think there's been a shift from, you know, trying to grow something that is good for, you know, the company and maybe good for society, to just making the quick buck and making as much as you can, you know, this quarter, and, you know, damned, you know, what happens, let's say, a generation from now or whatever, you know?
Yeah, and I think that this lack of ethics at such a widespread level is part of what political ponderology was trying to do, was explain the process of people of good conscience being coerced and provoked into giving up their ethics by the society that rewards the lack of conscience. If you continue to reward bad behavior, you just get more bad behavior.
Carol, I want to chime in, and you are so right about that. It is like, I see that in advertisements here in the United States. I see that in education. It's all about gaining the upper hand. We say in Portuguese, levar vantagem, to take the advantage. And I see that everywhere in advertising, in newspapers, and I am just dumbfounded. But that is something that we have a lot in common with the United States, Brazilians do, in that the media are dominated by a small coterie of families. Well, in the United States, maybe, you know, five families. In Brazil, it's like five families, and in the United States, it's like, you know, two or three mega corporations. Chime in.
You have a global, you know, you have the newspaper Global, or Globo, and then you have Bandeirantes, and you have all these, you know, networks. I don't know what kind of control they have over the people there.
Horrible. But,
it, you know, because I don't live there. I only can speak the language a little bit.
It's like, if you can imagine Fox News 24/7, that's Brazil.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding you. I am not kidding you. The television in Brazil is Fox News 24/7. All
Italy is like that too. It's It's heavy propaganda.
Well,
these abnormal behaviors have been glamorized, first of all. That started happening in the 50s. It got really serious when Reagan came in because he glamorized having this kind of an expansive, big home, lots of nice clothes, manicures every week lifestyle, which was impractical and out of reach for most Americans. And it's one of the ways we got talked into going so deeply into debt. And, you know, people say, oh, it's keeping up with the Joneses. But if you analyze that, you realize that there's been a concerted effort for people to live beyond their means in order to ensnare them. That's how Wall Street works. That's how it's been done to us over the last 40 years.
Yeah, credit cards.
Okay, Carol.
And it goes around the world. We have exported this crap, not just a bad food, but bad economy, austerity. Americans don't even realize they're already living austerity. It looks like canceling everybody's unemployment benefits after 26 weeks, that kind of stuff. Not offering them a job or having jobs available, and also taking away their benefits as though people are going to just shrivel up and die because you've removed their sustenance. They're going to go out and find sustenance. They're going to raise hell. Hopefully they will do a lot more. And if black people can stay on the cause here over the summer and keep the issue of police violence in front of people, we might actually make some headway there, but that's just a symptom of the larger problem.
Well, you know, Carol, what happens is that when times get tough, it's usually the wealthier classes that are busy telling the poor folks that they don't know how to save enough, that they ought to save.
Oh, whenever you hear blame the victim going on, you know you're talking to somebody who's been ponderized or is an essential psychopath. That is
yeah,
the old
Carol,
tactics.
Why don't you go back to school? Why don't you go back to school, Carol? I mean, really.
Well, you know, how are you going to ask someone who's poor to start saving, or how are you going to ask somebody who really needs their water, who doesn't really use that much water in the first place?
It's cruelty, Larry. They know better. They're doing this because they're sadists. I mean, not all psychopaths are sadists, but all sadists are psychopaths. And that kind of schadenfreude over people's misery is part of the game that they're playing. I mean, they're doing it on purpose. They're humiliating people and then mocking them on top of it.
Can you believe, Carol, that goes on television in Brazil 24/7? The poor shaming that goes on in Brazil 24/7. I get stuff in my email inbox, my Facebook. It's just sickening.
Has this always happened, or is it worse now than it's ever been?
It's ramped up. Ramped up heavy metal.
So in other words, yeah, okay.
Because we got a woman president, and nobody can stand that we have a woman president, and that she is following some New Deal policies of the FDR administration with transfer payments to the poor, and oh my God, teach a man how to fish. Don't give him a fish, you know the drill.
Calvinism. Yeah.
Well, Flavio, yeah. I hope you'll send me a contact request because I'll add you onto my Skype.
Oh.
At any rate.
Hey, before we go any further, I hate to be a killjoy or a spoil sport or anything, but we've got 15 minutes remaining in the program, and we have yet to raise the remaining $90 of this evening's necessary funding. So I simply...
By the way, I wanted to ask you a question, Bob. I wanted to send a couple of books for Ferg.
Uh-huh.
There is this beautiful book that I got. It's called Guitar in American Life, and I just wanted to make sure that he doesn't have it.
He doesn't.
It's by Tim Brooks.
He doesn't.
And It got a lot of encomia from NPR. A Culture and History of the Guitar, Dash of Flamenco, Early Blues, Hawaiian Steel, Black Slide, A Storyteller's Sense of Pitch and Timing, Kirkus Reviews. I gotta send Ferg this book.
That would be more than welcome. And
I just wanted to know.
Yeah, the same address that I put out there every evening would be the applicable one.
Okay, I'm signing out, and a good evening to one and all.
Well, thank you, Flavio. We enjoyed your participation. Have yourself a wonderful weekend.
Likewise. Ciao.
I got a question.
Ciao, baby.
Let me just wrap up what I was saying there a minute ago. We've got $90 to go to finish fundraising for the evening and go into the weekend with, you know, in not too horrible shape. So we had two kind contributions of 50 and one kind contribution of 10, and nine more people at $10, two at 45, three at 30. It makes little difference as long as we try to keep up with where we need to be. By the way, a note coming in from Steve in New York. He says, forgot just about the poor. It's the middle class that's told, can't afford it, borrow. Then when the middle class defaults, government bailout. Socialism for the rich and the banks. So, and by the way, Steve just said he will match the next $25 that come in, which will then leave us only $40 to go. So hopefully someone will take him up on that $25, and the next $40 will then happen. I'm sorry to interrupt with that kind of thing, but it's the only way we keep this all going. And just in regard to the conversation as it's been going on and laying everything at the feet of the psychopathic corporate class, we do, I think we do ourselves a disservice if we do not also include in that calculus our participation in it. The consumer class are the people who enable, just like in any addiction, scenario, we enable the brutalities of the 0.1%. Because there aren't enough of them to buy all their shit. It takes us. And I mentioned it last night in the course of introducing the article from the New York Times. You know, we're all joined at the hip by these little pocket computer devices that we didn't even have 15 years ago, 10 years ago. And every one of these things represents some quantum of abuse, of human rights abuse, labor abuse, worker abuse, human dignity abuse. I was floored by the New York Times story about the nail salons, not because I didn't suspect it was going on, but because it was a topic, because I'm a guy and I don't do nails, or I don't worry about my nails, that I didn't think about, and yet it's ubiquitous even in a place like Central West Virginia. You know, when you go in to get your nails done, you're participating in a vicious process that is vicious from start to finish. But the thing is, as I've said before, there are very few portions of the economy where we don't do that. You know, maybe you can be a member of a food co-op and get foods that are grown locally and not grown under oppressive or harvested or planted under oppressive conditions. But apart from that, very damn little. Is there a flaw in my reasoning?
My only question then, Bob, is how do we not participate in it? How do we change that?
Well, you get the answer to that one, and somebody will give you a Nobel Prize, Kevin.
Yeah.
It is, and that's the whole point. It is baked into the system. It is the very heart and beating, it is the very soul and beating heart of capitalism. The abuse of human beings. The commodification of human beings. Yeah. A system in which the dignity of the worker is the last damned thing on the mind of the money people.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, I think that the only way, and the whole group, I think the only way to alter that equation is to have a different kind of a system where perhaps Richard Wolff and Garl Perowitz have been talking about worker self-directed cooperatives where the workers do decide what goes on with the product. They also are the managers of the production facility, and they cooperate with one another, and they minimize a management structure and a board of directors, and they're working, they're the managers, and they're also the board of directors at the same time. And whether or not we get there, given the particular system that we have now, it may take, you know, it may take 100 years or so. I don't know, but that particular method of organizing productions been offered recently by Richard Wolff and Garl Perowitz, worker self-directed enterprises like Mondragon in Spain. Okay.
I think Larry, Rick here. I think Bernie Sanders has been promoting the idea of workers' co-ops as well. So.
He has been, Rick. And,
yeah.
And one of the questions is, how do you sell that to the booger eaters? And I think tongue planted firmly in cheek. I've got a solution. We name them Liberty Freedom Co-ops. Or if you could come up with a co-op gun store.
Colt 45 co-op.
Yeah, the freedom protecting crowd would flock to it.
That's right. It's all in the marketing, right, Bob?
Bingo. I mean, it's the,
like, just get rid of the word co-op. Find another word for co-op because they all seem to be freaking out about that.
Wait a minute, they are? They're freaking out about co-op?
I learned about that stuff when I was in grade school.
It comes out as communism to them. You know, their education level is second grade, Larry.
We've had co-ops in Berkeley and San Francisco for years. Well, we did. We used to have the co-op grocery store.
You can't use that part of the world as a comparison for anything, Larry. It's light years away from everything else. We like co-op in California, especially in Northern California, but you have to see that the majority of the population doesn't live, unfortunately, in Berkeley, although it feels like it when you're driving through it.
Yeah, it's got to sell in Peoria, basically. You know, you got to pitch to the broadest audience possible. And I think, I guess you could just call it like employee-owned businesses. That's probably a good way to put it, you know?
I'm wondering if I'm blessed to live here or whether or not I'm just sheltered or hopeless.
No. You are in a very happy little bubble, Larry.
Okay.
It's both, and that's okay.
What, happy and sheltered?
Yeah, that you live in, I think it's the best part of the country. I mean, the Bay Area is just so much further ahead. And
hey, there's an idea coming in from Steve. And by the way, Steve's challenge just got met by Michael. Thank you, Michael. Steve says, call it a kibbutz. And and all the American Christianity for Israel types will sign right on.
Just tell them it's only temporary until the awakening comes and they all get lifted away, that the kibbutzes will all go away too.
Hey,
right, they can call them Jews then.
Call it your rapture society.
Exactly. It's Israeli. It's support for the Israelis. That's what you're doing. You have the American kibbutz system.
I will say that I have seen on the right
some opposition to the TCP. I have been amazed to see some of the opposition coming out of your rank and file right wingers over the TPP. And that is something I thought I would never see.
Yeah, but consider the source, Kevin. The Republicans are opposing it because the Kenyan Muslim usurper in our White House wants it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're not opposing it for the right reasons, but so we can't really marshal them.
And it gets dangerous when you play that enemy of my enemy is my friend game.
Because, oh, man, never side with a snake.
And see, okay, so here's something I wanted to get into this evening, but now we're out of time. I'll just throw it out there for consideration going into the weekend. We have in excess of 300 American troops performing advisory roles in the Ukraine now. And tomorrow, which is probably already today, the former Soviet Union, Russia, will celebrate, and they're really celebrating. I mean, they're taking it seriously. They are celebrating. Fireworks, parades in Red Square, the works. The 70th anniversary of the end of the Second World War and the defeat of Nazi Germany. Well, they're celebrating the defeat of Nazi Germany, the end of the Second World War. It wouldn't come ultimately until August. But get this. Neither the United States nor Great Britain nor France are sending a single dignitary to that event. An event in which the Russians lost 15 million people defeating Hitler's Germany. Between the three of them, the United States, Britain, and France lost a combined 1.5 million. And because of the politics, because it would be seen, the optics would be wrong as being somehow supportive of Vladimir Putin, we will not send a dignitary to note this monumental celebration. And that's kind of sickening. Because it has nothing to do with Putin. It has everything to do with recognizing probably the most amazing engagement of collective self-sacrifice that any nation has ever engaged in.
Amen.
But we ain't going to be there. And the Brits aren't going to be there. And the French aren't going to be there.
Absolutely stupid. I mean, it's a historic event. How can you not? I mean, they were allied with the West against the Nazis. I mean, how can you not commemorate that? At least, they acknowledge their role in it. They're the ones who, basically the Allies delayed the invasion of Normandy for a long time, hoping, to try to get Russia, the Soviet Union, to bleed out all its people, all its troops, I know Stalin was going nuts about it, because Churchill had promised an invasion much earlier than a year before.
He wanted a second front. He had to have a second front. Well, I just wanted to toss that out there for consideration, because I got to get out of here.
Militarily, they did the right thing, but it was, they really had to, Ike and the rest of them had to crank that thing up to, except for the Battle of the Bulge. It wasn't that hard a drive compared with what the Russians had to do. It's a long way from Leningrad, Moscow, and Stalingrad, or Volgograd today. That is a long distance to Berlin. One hell of a distance.
Yeah. But we got to get out of here. So thank you, Kevin and Bill. Thank you, Rick and Carol and Flavio and Larry and Ron earlier. Thank you always, Sparky. Thanks to everybody who helped out this evening. We close out with $40 to go for fundraising to close the week. Thank you very, very kindly. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to everyone who shares their time in participating in this program. Thank you and congratulations to Cold River Mountain Watch, who now have ownership, a bill to pay, but ownership of the Judy Bonds Center for Appalachia's future. Yeah. And everyone have a wonderful weekend. And yes, Always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.